Hello, and welcome to Around It About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. My guest today is a body image expert who spent an entire year avoiding her own reflection. She wrote a blog about her experiences, a blog that got national attention, and then wrote a book. Her name is Kirsten Grise. Her book is called Mirror, Mirror, Off the Wall, How I Learned to Love My Body by Not Looking at It for a Year. I'm talking with her because she's coming to speak at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Kirsten Grise, welcome to Around It About.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, let's talk about why you decided to do this project, spend an entire year avoiding mirrors. When you were doing it, your wedding was coming up, and you were under all this insane pressure, as brides are, to look just fabulous for the wedding. I mean, it sounds almost like you snapped or something.
Well, I wouldn't say I had a moment where I snapped that gives me images of, bridezillas. But the wedding was definitely what caused me to seriously consider making this big step. Those of us who have planned weddings or been in them ourselves, all of a sudden you're exposed to a huge bulk of consumer culture that tells us that this is the most important day of our lives, and that especially for brides, it's the day we're supposed to look our most beautiful. I recovered from an eating disorder in college, and when I started feeling pressure to lose weight, to really focus so much on my appearance, I felt like I needed something powerful to push back from all that cultural pressure.
And your academic background, you went to Princeton, you got a BA from the Department of Sociology and a certificate in the study of women and gender, and you're teaching at UCLA now. So how does your academic background fit into that decision to, as you were saying, push back and stop worrying about what you look like in the mirror?
It fit really perfectly. In my teaching at UCLA, in addition to teaching sociology of gender, I also teach a seminar called Gender, Appearance, and Inequality. And in that work, as a teacher, as a mentor, I constantly am trying to help my students understand that it's really important to have a balanced perspective about body image. It should only be a small part of your overall self-image. So I felt not only a little threatened personally in terms of, you know, not wanting to backtrack into that realm of eating disordered or disordered thinking, but I also kind of felt protective of my students and wanting to, not so much be a hypocrite, but to really test out some of these assumptions I had so I could feel even more confident telling my students, no, really, this is possible.
Well, yeah, because I think that's what you want to do as a teacher, as a professor, is you don't want to just sit up there and give things from a theoretical point of view. You do want to actually speak from your own life experiences.
Exactly. A lot of what we think about when we're teaching is got to stick with the facts. But as a gender scholar, we're also told that the personal is political. And in this case, it worked really well, both on a personal level and a political level and in my teaching.
So you decide, I'm going to spend a year without looking in mirrors or other reflective surfaces, both in your own home and out in public. How does your family react to this? How does your fiance react to this with the wedding coming up?
Well, different reactions from different family members. So there were three main reactions. One was my younger sister, who is kind of like the down-to-earth yin to my, more uptight yang. And so my sister was very much in favor of me taking a step back from the wedding hoopla and vanity. My husband was also supportive up until the moment when he realized how much his own life would change in the meantime. But interestingly, my mom, who I really trust on a lot of things, her reaction was, that sounds great, but you're going to wait until after the wedding to do this project, right? So that gave me pause.
But you did overcome it, and your peers in academia, how did they react to this? Were they supportive? Were they like, this isn't the kind of thing we should really do as academics?
There was a lot of support. I think, I had at some times received advice from mentors saying, hey, when you position yourself in the academic realm, be sure to distinguish this as more of a public work than a purely academic one, which I knew from the beginning that this was personal. I actually started blogging and doing the project without telling anyone in my more academic sphere other than my peers who are also friends. But as I said, the personal is political, and those things started to emerge, especially when I realized that my sociological learning and expertise was really shaping my experience.
It's easy to control your own home, to cover the mirrors or take them out where you live. But when you're out in public, you know, there's mirrors everywhere. There are reflective surfaces everywhere. How do you deal with that?
There were two parts to that. The first was planning my, you know, my everyday encounters with my reflection. So I practiced walking to my department at UCLA on my walking commute and took note of places where there were a lot of reflective surfaces like store, shop windows, et cetera. So I kind of learned to predict those and not be surprised by them, to look away, to kind of put blinders on my eyes. But the biggest piece of it was simply training myself to automatically kind of look away if I did see my reflection for a moment. And I like to think of it, to compare it to the experience of seeing somebody walking towards you who you know but you really don't want to talk to. So you see that person, you recognize who it is, and immediately avoid eye contact. And I kind of spent my year avoiding eye contact with my reflection.
Well, it sounds kind of like that idea in meditation, like Zen meditation, where you have thoughts, but you're supposed to just let them pass through your mind without attaching yourself to them.
Absolutely. And for me, I distinguish this, you know, there I would see myself every day, but I didn't look.
So you kept on wearing makeup while you were doing this for a year. How did you put on makeup without being able to look at yourself in a mirror?
Well, I gave myself a few weeks to figure out how to navigate the world without mirrors. And I've worn makeup pretty much every day, at least during the work week since I was in my late teens. And I felt like giving up makeup while giving up mirrors was maybe too much to change at the same time. So I did, I backed up and used fewer products and more sheer products, kind of reduced my makeup routine from, you know, maybe 15 to 20 minutes down to 3 to 5 minutes, just so I felt kind of like myself. It was a routine that that I was used to, and I continued it, but I also had to accept the fact that sometimes I would walk out the door with mascara on my nose, and I had to trust people to tell me and not feel devastated to find out I didn't look perfect.
Well, it's interesting you kept wearing makeup because you talk about this in the book. There's this kind of feminist paradox where if you do decide to wear makeup and ascribe to the traditional beauty standards, people say, well, then you're not a real feminist. But on the other hand, if you let feminists tell you what to do, then you're not a real feminist because you're letting other people tell you what to do. It's just you can't win either way.
Well, I think after giving this a lot of thought, I realized that these are inappropriate and untrue, you know, differences. So being a feminist at its core is really about believing in and working towards equality between men and women and also all sorts of social inequality across other boundaries. The issue of makeup and hairstyling and fashion has been really contentious politically simply because there are debates as to whether these commercialized industries are bad for women or good for women. Now, as a sociologist, I know that humans are creatures who evolved to decorate ourselves. This is how we communicate who we are, what groups we're members of, etc. And so there's a sense that eliminating that is eliminating part of the human experience. And the more you talk to contemporary feminists, the more you'll hear them say, you know, when I think about makeup and fashion, it's important to consider how, you know, we might individually be feeding into certain systems or advertising campaigns or companies that are particularly, you know, misogynistic, for example, and yet limiting ourselves along those lines limits freedom and self-expression.
So you spent the year without looking in mirrors. That year is over. You've written the book. What have you learned now? What has changed in your life as a result of doing this for a year?
I feel kind of cheesy saying it, but it made all the changes I hoped it would. And throughout the year, I started feeling increasingly comfortable with my body and more importantly with myself as a whole. So the big takeaway from my project that I've continued to experience is that having a healthy body image is not about looking in the mirror every day and saying I'm a 10 out of 10. It's about looking in the mirror, saying, hey, that's me, I'm a unique person, and the way I look is only one small part of who I am as a whole. And it's more important to like who I am as a whole than it is to necessarily feel like I'm super gorgeous at every moment of my existence.
What advice would you have for other people who are, you know, worried about how much time they spend in the mirror, worrying about their own body, obsessing over their own beauty standards, things like that?
You know, the advice that I would give people, you know, a lot of people ask, should I give up mirrors too? And my experience is that giving up mirrors is fantastic, but it's also quite a lot of work. My suggestion is two things. One is go camping and leave your mirrors behind and just give yourself a break from all of that focus on appearance. And the second is for those of us who really love fashion and beauty magazines, makeup, et cetera, it's great to be involved in those cultural, you know, experiences. But if you're going to subscribe to Cosmo, go ahead and subscribe to National Geographic, too, because we don't see enough of what real women look like.
That makes a lot of sense. In the book, you talk about the phenomenon of mirrors for good. What is mirrors for good?
Well, mirrors for good is a way to understand mirrors not as the enemy, but all as tools that we can use to understand ourselves better and in a way face the reality of our bodies instead of as a judgment, but as a fact. So, for example, a lot of eating disorder and body image treatment centers will ask their patients to spend time looking in the mirror and to make factual statements instead of judgmental statements. So instead of saying, oh my gosh, I'm so ugly, you could look in the mirror and say, I have brown eyes, I have pink lips, I have a curvy body. And by observing your body as a fact instead of a judgment, you can start training your mind to have that healthier view even when you're away from mirrors.
One of the songs that you played at your wedding, it's one of my favorite songs, I'll Be Your Mirror by the Velvet Underground. Why did you pick that song? It seems so almost sarcastic for your situation.
Yeah, you know, there were moments when I was wavering just because it seemed kind of cheesy to have a mirror song at my wedding. But throughout my research for the book project, I stumbled upon this song, which the line is, I'll be your mirror, and it reflects, again, pun intended, something that I found to be very true, which is that the best mirrors that we can use in our everyday life are actually the reflections of ourselves that we see in the people we spend time with. So I'm a sociologist, and we focus on how social interaction creates reality, our understanding of reality. And it truly is the people you spend time with who will bolster or harm your self-image. And I found in my husband, in my family, in my close friends, that they have never wavered in their affection for me as a whole person, and that sometimes I would be better off listening to them than my own judgmental thoughts.
Well, yeah, that's something I think that is true for a lot of women and a lot of guys, is that, like, we're married to a woman. She spends all this time on her hair and stuff. And we're like, what's up with that? We think you look great the way you are. Why are you spending all this time on your appearance? Isn't it good enough that we think you look great already?
Yeah, I think that can be a really frustrating cycle for women and their male partners because the women are fed a lot of messages in our media that say beauty is safety from, you know, losing love, that if you're extreme, the more beautiful you are, the safer you are in your relationships. And that can be such a powerful message that even when we are in relationships with individuals who say, I love you just the way you are, we almost don't believe them. So when I wrote the book and when I speak, especially to teen girls, I ask them, if you're trying to be beautiful in order to have a safe love life, so to speak, or to keep these relationships sound, you should listen to the people in the relationships instead of these media examples that that, you know, are there to sell you products, not to make you feel secure just the way you are.
Something I think is really interesting, the internet, it seems like in a lot of ways made this possible, in the sense that, sure, 30 years ago, before we all had the internet in our homes and on our phones, you could have done this, but you wouldn't have had all the, I guess you could say, self-inflicted peer pressure that you were putting on yourself to help keep you up with this, having this blog and having all these national publications call you and kind of keep you on the path during this.
Yeah, you know, it certainly would have been, it wouldn't have grown into as big of a project with the scope and reach that it did. But again, I started out just telling my closest friends and family, and I suppose I could have just as easily done that 30 years ago.
Now that the year is over, how often do you look in the mirror?
I think I look in the mirror about as much as the average woman, which is to say I look in the mirror when I'm getting ready, and I look in the mirror, you know, when I'm using the restroom and washing up, and there's a mirror in front of me. The difference isn't in how many times or how much time I spend in front of the mirror. It's how I'm using it, and it's a less stressful, almost stress-free process these days, as opposed to one in which all I could do was zero in on flaws.
Have you found a lot of, like, academic hard research about how often someone looks in the mirror and how that relates to the person's self-esteem?
There actually have not been studies, not that I know of, that relate time spent in front of the mirror directly to self-esteem. Of course, that would assume that people are always looking in the mirror feeling bad about themselves, and there are certainly some people that look in the mirror a lot because they feel great about themselves. So that would be a very difficult study to tease out, not that it wouldn't be possible. What I find more interesting is research that suggests that when we view our body image as, or our appearance as being a very large portion of our self-image, those people tend to have lower self-esteem and more fragile self-esteem as they age and naturally, you know, grow out of our culture's definition of beauty, which seems to be stuck somewhere between age 15 and 22.
You'll be coming here to the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga to speak on campus. Of course, it's an event that's open to the whole public. It's not just a university event. But what are you planning to talk about? What kind of questions do you anticipate? How do you want to help people while you're here?
Well, to put it plainly without giving too much away, is when I give a talk about my experience giving up mirrors, almost all of the questions have to do with how I did it. But
yeah,
the talk I'm planning has more to do with why.
So you're hoping people can really learn something important from this?
I do hope so. I really do.
Kirsten, thank you so much for talking with us. Your book is Mirror, Mirror Off the Wall. How can the listeners find your website?
There are two ways. The first is to simply Google search Mirror, Mirror Off the Wall. The other one is the website is ayearwithoutmirrors.com.
Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.